Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are going, well, deep into a world most people never really touch. The dense, high-stakes math behind predicting how water moves.
It's a fascinating space.
Yeah.
And it's incredibly important.
It really is. We've got a highly technical source today. It's a paper that was just submitted to the International Journal for Numerical Methods in Fluids.
Right.
If you even just read the title out loud, an unstructured second-order subgrid method for the shallow water equations, I mean, it sounds like pure algebra.
It does. But underneath all that jargon, there's a really fundamental breakthrough.
Exactly. So let's unpack this. Our mission here is to take this numerical analysis abstract. Its identifier is RxU.2601.801895 and really pull out the core innovation.
We need to figure out why this very specific mathematical method creates such a massive real-world win for computational efficiency.
Especially in these critical areas, you know, like flood and tsunami modeling.
This is a perfect deep dive for anyone who cares about data and speed. This work, it lives in the world of numerical analysis.
Which is that crucial bridge, right, between real-world physics and what a computer can actually calculate.
Precisely. It's the bridge between how water actually flows and the discrete step-by-step calculations a computer makes. We're talking about the shallow water equations here.
Which are foundational for this kind of work.
Absolutely. They're used for any large-scale fluid movement, ocean tides, river floods, storm surges, you name it. And the eternal struggle is always balancing the need for incredible detail.
Against the astronomical cost of actually computing that detail.
That's the one. And that struggle brings us right to the fundamental trade-off they are trying to solve here. Let's call it the computational compromise.
So just to set the scene, think about what it takes to simulate a real-world water event, like a flash flood that's running over really varied terrain.
Or a tsunami hitting a complex coastline.
Right. You need to model every single bump, every channel, every little change in elevation.
Exactly. And to capture that kind of detail, you traditionally have to cover your entire area, the whole ocean basin or the whole city, with a globally fine computational grid.
We're talking millions or even billions of tiny little squares or triangles.
Billions, easily. And calculating the flow dynamics across every single one of those elements for thousands of time steps, well, it demands massive supercomputing time and budget.
That is the high cost of accuracy.
It is.
So how do these researchers propose to sort of cheat that system? What's the clever architectural trick here that lets them get the detail without paying that full price?
The trick is what they call the unstructured numerical subgrid method. So instead of one uniform grid,
they use something more complex.
They use a primary, coarse, unstructured triangular mesh. Now, this mesh is already more adaptable than, say, simple square grids, but the real power is that it supports local refinement.
Local refinement, so you can zoom in.
You can zoom in, but only where it's absolutely necessary. They can select specific, crucial areas, like a narrow river channel or a steeply sloped coastline, and locally triangulate those coarse elements into much, much finer subgrids.
It's like zooming in on a map, but only in that one tiny critical area.
That's a perfect analogy. It creates this flexible, dynamic computational fabric.
And here's what I found to be the key insight. And it's really about a kind of computational triage. They don't just use different sized meshes. They actually split the data itself between them.
Yes, this is the core of it.
They're deciding which pieces of information are worth the high computational expense of that fine mesh and which can be solved more cheaply on the coarse one.
Exactly.
So tell us about that data separation. Which data gets the, let's say, the Rolls-Royce treatment and which gets the economy fare?
Okay, so the high-resolution Rolls-Royce data is the bathymetry.
Which is the underwater topography, the shape of the seabed, the land elevation.
The geography that doesn't really change during the simulation. This is represented entirely on the fine mesh.
Why there?
Because those small-scale geographical features, they dictate everything about how water moves. If your model misses a tiny ridge on the seabed, your entire simulation could be wrong.
Okay, so that's the high-end stuff. What's the economy fare?
The economy fare is the velocities, the actual movement and momentum of the water. That's all defined and calculated only on the much, much cheaper coarse mesh.
And the main equations, too.
And crucially, yes, the governing shallow water equations themselves are solved numerically on that coarser resolution.
That sounds incredibly efficient, but it also brings up a pretty big question.
I think I know where you're going with this.
If the geographical detail, the bathymetry, is forcing the flow on that fine mesh, but the actual flow calculation, the velocity, is happening on the coarse mesh, how do we know we're not missing something?
Like small-scale turbulence.
Exactly. Small-scale turbulence or flow features that the fine bathymetry should have created. I mean, isn't that a huge risk?
That is the essential challenge of any subgrid method. You absolutely risk introducing errors by, well, by averaging out the physics.
But the payoff must be huge.
The payoff is immense. You get the topographical accuracy of the fine mesh for the definition. But the most time-consuming step all, the number crunching for the velocity calculation, is done on the cheaper, coarser grid.
And the savings.
The computational savings can be orders of magnitude.
Wow. Okay. But if we're taking a shortcut on the grid, we have to buy back that quality control and accuracy somewhere else. This simulation needs to be reliable.
Of course.
And that takes us to our second section, achieving accuracy. What's in their toolkit to maintain that precision?
So since they are deliberately using a cheaper grid for the core calculations, they have to use really top-tier mathematical methods to process the data on that grid.
This is where that second-order accuracy from the title comes in.
Exactly. Essentially, second-order methods are designed to ensure that the error in your calculation decreases very quickly by a factor of 4 every time you double the resolution.
So it's a guarantee of quality.
It's a stamp of quality, yeah.
So what are the specific tools they're using to ensure this, especially with those critical velocity calculations happening on the coarse mesh?
They use two specific tools. First, to make sure the calculation of the water's movement stays smooth and physically realistic, they use something called a WENO method.
We know.
Stands for weighted, essentially non-oscillatory.
Okay, non-oscillatory. Can you translate that for us? Why is preventing oscillations so critical in water modeling?
Right. So think about a really sharp physical feature in the water, like a hydraulic jump or the leading edge of a tidal wave. It's a near instantaneous jump in water height or velocity.
Very sharp change.
A very sharp change. And if you try to calculate that sharp jump with the simple numerical method, the method will often produce these numerical wiggles or oscillations right near the jump.
And those wiggles are bad.
They're very bad. They can lead to impossible physical predictions, like predicting negative water depth, which can just completely crash your model.
Or at least invalidate it.
Right. The WENO method is highly sophisticated. It automatically adjusts its own weighting to make sure it captures those sharp features accurately without creating those unrealistic, spurious oscillations. It keeps the physics grounded.
So the WENO method is like this detail-oriented editor, making sure the velocity data stays clean and doesn't predict impossible physics.
That's a good way to put it.
What about managing the flow of time itself?
For advancing the simulation through time, what we call temporal integration, they use an explicit Runge-Kutta method.
Oh, also second order accurate, I assume.
Also designed to be second order accurate. If the WENO method is the editor checking the spatial data, the Runge-Kutta method is their sophisticated stopwatch.
Making sure the simulation jumps through time steps without getting sloppy.
Exactly. Without accumulating sloppy cumulative error. It's a very efficient and robust way to manage time evolution in dynamic systems.
Okay, so that's a robust strategy for general fluid dynamics, but the authors had to build two entirely new tools just for their specific architecture to make this subgrid method work.
Yes, that's where the real novelty is.
Let's move to section 3, novelty and specific challenges. What unique problems did this whole subgrid structure create for them?
The subgrid structure, with its constantly moving refined zones, it created these unique interface challenges. Especially when you're dealing with something like a coastline.
Right.
So the first novel component is a new subgrid face value reconstruction. And this was necessary because they specifically had to deal with what are called partially wet cells.
Partially wet cells, I'm guessing that's the technical term for the edge of the water, the beach, or the shoreline?
Precisely. Think of a single coarse grid cell that covers a wide stretch of flat ground. As a flood advances, that one coarse cell might be half dry land, half water.
And within that cell, only some of the fine subgrid cells are actually wet.
Exactly. Their new reconstruction method is designed to stabilize and accurately manage that highly dynamic waterline and make sure the waterland boundary is modeled smoothly.
Which is absolutely critical for any practical flood prediction.
If you can't model that moving boundary accurately, your flood model is basically useless.
Okay, so that handles the wet-dry boundary. What was the second unique tool they had to invent?
The second tool addresses gravity. They developed a newly designed gravity source term, discretization.
The force of gravity.
Right. The gravitational force is constant, but translating that continuous force into discrete step-by-step instructions for the computer. especially on this highly irregular mixed resolution mesh that requires extreme care.
What happens if you get it wrong?
If you handle the gravity term incorrectly on a grid with varied depths, you can introduce artificial errors immediately.
Okay. So if they successfully integrate these two novel components, the face value reconstruction for the dynamic coastlines and the gravity discretization for stability, what's the ultimate payoff?
The result is a scheme that is shown to be well-balanced on the subgrid level.
And well-balanced is a really important term in this field.
It's foundational. A well-balanced scheme means that if you set up a simple scenario, like a still body of water, perfectly flat, but resting on a seabed with varying hills and valleys, the model will maintain that steady state. It will just sit there.
And if it wasn't well-balanced?
If it weren't, the numerical errors would essentially cause the still pond to start artificially swirling. It would create phantom waves, even though the physics says nothing should be happening.
The model would be generating its own motion.
It would be generating its own motion, throwing off all the results.
Yeah.
So achieving this perfect balance, especially with such a complicated subgrid structure, it really confirms the method's mathematical rigor.
That confirms the math holds up. So let's look at the real-world proof. The abstract mentions this research includes extensive testing and validation, something like 24 pages and 13 figures.
Yes, they were very thorough.
What were the key practical outcomes they were able to demonstrate?
So through several pretty comprehensive test cases, they validated that the scheme delivers on three key promises for practical use. First, they confirm the stability. The scheme is, in fact, well-balanced.
Check.
Second, they confirm the order of the accuracy of the scheme.
Which is vital. It proves that their blend of coarse grid calculation and those fancy second-order tools actually maintains the quality standard you need.
It does. And the third outcome, well, this sounds like the most critical one for any environmental application.
Let me guess. The moving boundaries.
You got it. They successfully demonstrated the scheme's capability of handling moving flood and dry boundaries with precision.
And that's what flood and storm surge modelers need more than anything.
It's what they need most. A dynamic model that efficiently and accurately tracks how water penetrates inland and then retreats back out to sea. This subgrid efficiency makes running huge numbers of flood scenarios for planning, for insurance, far more computationally feasible.
You know, I found the final practical insight in their abstract just as valuable. It wasn't just them saying, look, our method works. They actually provided guidance on how to use it most effectively.
Yes, this is where the research shifts from pure theory to real application. They specifically identified the criteria for when it is most beneficial to increase the number of subgrid cells to improve your results.
They defined the sweet spot for resolution.
They did.
And what determines that sweet spot? Is it just based on how steep the topography is, or is it something else?
It's a combination of factors, but critically, it's about identifying areas where the fine bathymetry detail is having a nonlinear impact on the velocity.
So where the flow is changing rapidly because of some small geographical feature.
Exactly. By isolating those areas, they're essentially telling modelers where to spend their computational money for the highest return on accuracy.
Instead of just guessing or running every single simulation on the maximum fine mesh possible.
Right. They provide a roadmap for that computational triage we talked about.
So if we connect this to the bigger picture for you, the listener, what's the takeaway?
The takeaway is that this is a really sophisticated solution to a very old problem. It allows researchers to preserve the critical small-scale geographical features, that's the bathymetry on the fine mesh, while calculating the large-scale complex water movement much, much faster.
How much faster?
But operating the main governing equations on the much cheaper coarse mesh.
So we took this highly technical abstract and we pulled out this core idea of computational triage. It's about figuring out which pieces of data absolutely need that high fine mesh resolution and which can be approximated or solved faster on a coarser grid for immense speed gains.
It really is an elegant solution to that perennial accuracy versus efficiency showdown.
It is, which it brings up an important question for you to consider as you move forward.
The authors, they specifically identify that tipping point where adding more subgrid cells goes from being highly beneficial to just diminishing returns.
So the question is, how does identifying that precise computational tipping point shift the priorities and even the budgets of large-scale environmental modeling projects?
Knowing exactly where to spend and where to save fundamentally changes what kind of comprehensive scenario planning becomes computationally feasible for government agencies, for large engineering firms, for everyone, really.